Welcome to the Dermatology Interest Group Association podcast, or DIGA podcast, where we talk about everything from how to become a stellar dermatology applicant to interesting topics in dermatology.
From research advice to interviewing tips, you will be prepared to follow the path to become a world-class dermatologist.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. I'm your host for today's episode, Austin Black. Today we are joined by our very own Nate Marquin, who recently matched into a dermatology residency position in Orlando, Florida. Nate was serving as the podcast chair for the DIGA podcast for the past year and has been a host with us for quite some time. So in today's episode, he shares with us kind of the tips and tricks he's learned along the way that led him to be successful in matching dermatology. And with that said, we'll see you on the skin side. All right, everyone, welcome back to the show. Today is a fun one for us. And we are joined by Nate, one of our leaving hosts from the podcast and recently matched hosts. He's kind of here to share with us his tips for matching, his success story, and kind of how he found derm and really anything that he has on his mind for the moment. So we want to say thanks for joining us, Nate. I don't think you need any introduction, but if you want to introduce yourself, feel free and go ahead.
Right. So you've heard my voice on this podcast before, and today I'm being interviewed, so it's a little bit different. But all I can say is that this podcast has been great. A lot of people know about it. It helped a lot of students throughout the last few years. I've had students who I've matched with on the interview trail and audition trail all reach out to me and talk to me saying that it helped a lot. So I'm glad that it's in your hands now, Austin, and you're going to keep the legend going, or the excitement of it going for everyone.
Yeah, it's been great to see it grow. I know as we're recording this episode, we just put out our 100th episode, which is pretty exciting. And hopefully that just continues to grow from there. Well, we'll kind of jump into your story. So the questions that I like to ask everyone is how and when did you find derm in your journey to ultimately becoming a dermatologist?
Right. So people have heard this before from me, but I was interested in ortho before I came into med school. Lived in San Diego, and my wife worked for a big ortho practice, and they saw like the San Diego Chargers and the Aztecs. It's like, wow, that'd be awesome. You know, like work with professional athletes. I thought that'd be great. And then I got into med school. It was COVID year 2020. And I think it was September. So first year started in July. It was a few months in. And my wife and my oldest daughter, before we had our second, flew back to California, and they sat, you know, I sat at the house basically for a month by myself, studying, reviewing PowerPoints. Everything was shut down. You know, didn't have any really friends because couldn't go on campus really. And I was like, well, if I go into ortho, there's a possibility that I'm always going to be in the OR. It's a possibility that I'm going to work nights. I'm going to work weekends. I'm going to be on call. And I'm not afraid of hard work. I was like, but I deployed 3 times. I was in the military. And if I wanted to be gone a lot, I would have stayed in the military. So I was like, what specialty is going to allow me to work with my hands, allow me to be visual, but also allow me to be home for my wife and kids and be present? And I kind of went down the road specialties. You know, I looked into radiology. And me, I'm a big networker, as we could talk about this in a little bit. So I went on LinkedIn and I found every radiologist that graduated from my school and sent them a message on LinkedIn. You know, kind of talked to them, got some info. Then I went to ophthalmology. I think the eye's great. I really didn't reach out, but doing eye surgery wasn't for me, maybe. I just didn't dive into that too much. Anesthesiology, kind of did the same thing. Found some anesthesiologists, talked to them. And then for some reason, I went to a talk with one of our alumni. At the time, she was a PGY2, and she just blew my mind at dermatology. How diverse it was, how you can tailor it to what you want it to be. If you want to be an allergist who does dermatology, you can do allergy. If you want to be immunology and do dermatology, you could tailor it to how you want. And it blew my mind how multifaceted it was, and you still can work a 4-day work week, have great patient care, have continuity with your patients, but also be home to be a father and be a husband. And that was important to me. So ever since then, I dove into dermatology, and now I'm matched. So that's my story to derm.
You said that was first year. Was that when that all happened?
Yeah. So gotcha. September of first year, it was a weird awakening. I was just sitting there studying every day for that month of September. I was just like, wow. You know, I can't imagine not being around my family. And it pushed me to derm. And it's funny because my mother-in-law, she's had a bunch of basals and squames and, you know, a melanoma or two. She's like, you should be a dermatologist. My dermatologist has time for his kids. Like, he's always happy, has a pep in his step. I was like, nah, I just don't want to treat acne like before I went to med school because I was ignorant. I didn't really know how diverse dermatology was. And then I got into that I went to that lecture by the alumni and it just blew my mind. And I was like, wow. And then I can't even talk about the first time I treated an Accutane patient where I saw just seeing the difference in the person's expression and their mood and their demeanor from their picture. And then walking into that patient room and seeing them with a smile and just like this gleam and glow coming off of them. I bite my words today on saying I would never want to treat acne because I think it's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely that kind of psychosocial impact mm-hmm. dermatologists can have far and beyond what a lot of specialties can. So that's another cool aspect and another facet you could add into the things mm-hmm. that many people enjoy in derm. You mentioned this, and I think that most people who decide on derm or one of these kind of like you mentioned the road specialties, definitely whether they want to admit it or not, consider kind of the lifestyle that those specialties, are known for. And like you mentioned, not having as much call, if call at all, and kind of having these better hours. Curious just kind of your perspective. And I definitely know people have asked me or said to me like, oh, did you pick it just because of the lifestyle? And it's, I don't want to say no, because it's definitely something I considered, but it's also like, if I didn't love the subject matter itself, like I wouldn't do it just because it has a good lifestyle. And kind of, I guess, what experience have you had with that type of a question or conversation, or have those questions ever been brought up, like say in interviews or from attendings, like, are you picking it just because, you know, the pay is good, the hours are good, the lifestyle is good?
I think that's a great question. And to kind of get into that, any job that you go into, right? Doesn't have to be medicine. If you're going into any job, you want to know what hours you're going to work. You want to know what you're going to be compensated. And you're not going to basically sign a contract or start a job if you don't know that. So what's the difference with us being medicine and being in doctors and going into medicine? And understand, we have to be altruistic and we have to care for our patients. And I have no problem with that. That's one of the big things of going into medicine. But we should want to be taken care of in ourselves without outside of medicine. And we should want to be fairly compensated for the sacrifice that we have sacrificed the last 15 years of our life to become doctors. So when people, I've always told from upperclassmen, don't go on rotations and tell anyone you're going to be a dermatologist. You're going to dermatology. People are going to give you a hard time. And that's not me. I'm straightforward. I'm a straightforward person. Hey, you know, I'm trying to go into dermatology, but this rotation, whatever rotation X I'm on, I'm going to bust my butt and I'm going to learn the best I can to be the best student here for you. But so you know that dermatology is where I want to go, you know, and anytime I did that, most of the attendings or the preceptors I was with would find a way to incorporate their specialty into dermatology. I did a psych rotation. It was my first rotation in third year. And that doctor was like, dude, there's a lot of psych in dermatology. You don't realize that. I want you to look up all this stuff on psych issues with dermatology, and I want you to present on it. So now I was learning psych, but also a way to incorporate it with dermatology. And every rotation I went on that, they were all that way. I will say that I went on an internal medicine rotation, my first IM rotation on wards, and they kind of gave me a hard time saying, oh, you want a good lifestyle, you want money. But hey, again, I'm here to work for this month with you and do the best I can and put my best foot forward to learn from you. I'm going to own my patients. I'm going to look up whatever you want me to look up. Doesn't, just because I'm trying to go in dermatology, isn't going to stop me from learning the stuff I need to learn from this rotation. So the way I went about it is, yeah, you know, I have a family. You know, I want to be present. And, you know, I like I said, if I wanted to be gone, I would have stayed in the military and I'd be retiring in 6 years. So you have to form it in a way like, oh, I don't want to just sit on my butt and go sit Mai Tais on the weekends or during the week. No, it's, I want to work hard, but I also want to enjoy my time with my family or whatever it is to you. You just can't be like, yeah, I want to go to the Bahamas or whatever it is. You have to form it right in a sentence where it's not like you're just kind of gloating about having a good lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. I've definitely had that same, you know, question asked. I feel like it's a pretty typical question you get third year, whether it's your attending, your resident, your co-student, or you're just meeting for the first time. Like kind of one of the questions they always ask is, you know, what are you interested in applying to? And to your point, like there's definitely been times where, you know, you're on some of these like surgery, IM, these mm-hmm. more intense rotations, and you're kind of like, I don't want to say ashamed or embarrassed, but you know that they're just going to kind of have this viewpoint in their mind when you say dermatology. I've actually had a little bit of the opposite experience. I've had a lot of like these more intense specialty surgery IM. A lot of them are like, oh, good for you. Like, I wish I liked the skin and dermatology enough to go into a specialty that allowed me to have that kind of a lifestyle. Like, unfortunately, but fortunately, like, I love surgery and like, I want to be a surgeon, and kind of part of being a surgeon is this lifestyle.
I just think that, you know, there's always going to be someone who's negative, and no matter where you go, that's just life. And there's going to be people in wherever you go that they're going to be like, good for you. Like, that's for you. And you're going to do it. Like, make sure you bust your butt, because it's hard. So just, you're going to get a balance of both.
Yeah. Yeah. And I definitely think that's the case that I've had myself kind of through these experiences. And like you mentioned, I feel like when people know that, it's like on OB, we had patients come in, you know, with rashes, things like that, who are about, you know, going into labor, and they're like, go check out this patient, like, go tell us what they've got going on. And so there's, you know, it's present, it's ever present. You know, surgery, people who get bandages afterwards, and they maybe have like a contact allergen to the adhesive and the bandage, they're always like, oh, go check this out. So you kind of become the go-to for it. And more often than not, they always kind of joke, because they're like, this is the most, you know, we've seen a dermatologist, quote unquote, in the last month, because they're not around the hospital as much.
Yeah, I think if you go in there and you're not kind of BSing them and saying, I'm going to do general surgery because you're on a general surgery rotation. If you're interested in dermatology, let them know. But again, put the work in. So even if they're giving you a hard time, like, hey, man, this guy works hard, whatever. Like, he wants to go into dermatology, that's fine. But they can't just give you a hard time because they think you want to coast for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think more often than not, they understand too, it's competitive. And so you're not just trying to coast. Like, you have to put in the work to get there as well. So I guess to all the listeners, don't be afraid to own your passions and interests.
100%. Don't ever back away from who you are. Be who you are. Voice that. For sure.
Yeah. So first year med school, you kind of find derm, decide maybe it's something I want to pursue. Kind of one of the things that I know you're very proud of, and being out of DO school and kind of the match rates of DOs and derms, having historically not been as high and starting to climb. Can you speak to, like, were you intimidated at all coming from a DO school and maybe not having a home derm program or the same type of resources that, you know, a traditional MD school might have in that situation?
So I came in interested in a competitive specialty, right? And one of the reasons I chose Rocky Vista was because it was mandatory for us to take step, and not a lot of DOs require you to take step, and a DO school is like required to take step. And I saw that as, wow, this school wants me to be competitive. And so I came in with the same type of attitude of like, I'm going to bust my butt, however hard it takes or however long it takes, I'm going to get it done. And I was a little, you know, I was nervous about derm because it's hard, but then I started reaching out to all my alumni, and Rocky Vista has matched a lot of dermatologists, a lot. This year we matched seven dermatologists.
Yeah.
Last year it was three, and I think before that it was six, and then three and four before that. So I was like, it's been done. And the first thing I did was reach out to every single one of those individuals that matched within the last 4 or 5 years and figure out how they did it. So that was one of the key things that I did, was basically network starting year one.
Yeah, I think that's huge. I think, you know, the saying goes, derm is a small field, and you're always like, oh yeah, like, I feel like there's a dermatologist, you know, every couple blocks. But in reality, like, academic derm in itself is a very small field. And so, like you said, networking and almost who you know, is as important, if not maybe more important, than some of the other aspects of your application. So reaching out to these alumni, was there kind of a resounding answer, like a common answer that they gave on how they succeeded, and kind of what would you share from their advice to the listeners here?
So depending on, you know, if you're a DO or an MD, it really depends. And as a DO, it's going and doing auditions, getting out there and getting the face time. Yeah, you need a good application. You need to have publications. You need to have volunteerism. You need to have something on your application that's you personally, but getting those auditions and rotating in your third year, beginning of your fourth, end of your third, beginning of your fourth year, to make those connections. For an MD, I know it's harder. I know having, I don't want to say they screen more, because, you know, everyone's looking at applications more holistically now, but you need to have good scores. You need to be very well published, and you need to make the connection. So I think, I'm not saying that DO programs don't care about scores and they don't care about publications, but I know getting face time at these rotations, at these programs, is very important.
So I guess that's one thing maybe you could speak to. So kind of the away rotation, audition rotation, however you want to to call it, tends to differ between the like the historically allopathic programs and the osteopathic programs, where the allopathic programs, students typically, I think the governing body released a statement trying to limit to two away rotations. And those typically are anywhere from like 4 weeks to 6 weeks long. But the osteopathic ones, I think I've heard of some being as short as a week, maybe 2 weeks is kind of on the longer end. Could you maybe speak to you know, kind of how long they might be, what the process is like to finding those, if it's the same way that the allo or the MD students find theirs, kind of on the same like V-slow type application, that type of thing. Could you speak to that?
Yeah. So last year, or maybe beginning of my third year, they came out, the governing body said, if you don't have a home program, you could do three away program or three away rotations. If you have a home program, you can only do two. And that really doesn't take into consideration the DO programs because we don't have home programs. And like you said, most of those allopathic programs are 4 weeks long, possibly six. For DOs, it's max two that I've seen, maybe a month, some of them, but it's two. Most of them are 1 week long. And doing a month to 2 months, I guess if you tally them all up and do them within the normal amount of time or consecutively, it may be 2 to 3 months, but it's a challenge because you have to get it scheduled and your schedule may not align properly. And there's days where you have weeks where you have gaps and all the other stuff. And that's probably one of the hardest parts of third year for a DO student is getting those set up because there's various ways. So some programs go straight through email. You contact the program coordinator, send them an email very early. I probably reached out to the program I matched at in December of my third year, like the middle of my third year before like the spring semester. And I sent them an email. And same thing, I basically went down the list, all the programs I was interested in, sent them an email in early December, maybe January. And the ones that were email based said, you're good. Here's a rotation date, or send us some dates and we'll see what works. The other option for DOs is Clinician Nexus. You can go on, and a lot of the HGA programs like Orange Park and Largo and Lewis Gale and Blacksburg and Dallas Fort Worth, they're all through Clinician Nexus. And you basically submit an application and you kind of wait around hoping that you get one. And then there's also some programs that are on the VSLO, which a lot of the allopathic programs are on there, which you can submit applications. And sometimes they require you to have like a personal statement or a letter of interest or whatever it is, but you kind of submit that way. So it's very, it's all over the board. And no one tells you when to reach out. No one tells you who to email. No one tells you when an application's due. So you have to kind of be on top of your game. And like I tell the people that I'm mentoring who are below me in my school, is the beginning of your third year, get a list of all the programs interested in that are primary or previously DO programs, and find out that program coordinator's information. Start sending them an email maybe halfway through that first semester to show your interest, and just kind of follow up every month until December, and then you should probably start getting answers. And people are probably like, hey, how am I going to get the program coordinator's information? You know what I did? I went on Doximity. They have a residency section and they list the program coordinator and their email. Went through the list of every single program, got that email, and sent them all an email that, hey, I was interested in your program. What do I got to do to get a rotation? Basically, that's sums it up.
Yeah. Kind of putting in the extra work to find who you need to reach out to. That's a little frustrating that there's kind of three different ways, I guess, you can go about it and trying to plan your schedule. I know a lot of the MD applicants are complaining with trying to match up their school rotations with their two away rotations. And I think you guys got a leg up trying to match up your six or eight or however many away rotations you guys do with your schedule.
Yeah.
What do you feel like the normal, like the average is that a DO applicant does for aways?
I think there's a statistic number like seven. I had 10 and I backed out of two because of money, financial, and I was living out of my car and being on the road. So I was over it. My friend did 10. I think seven is probably average.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And most of those are about a week, you said, maybe a few there too. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So being on like that week that you're there, it's kind of, you know, an extended interview. And I know it can be draining and exhausting because you feel like you're having to put your best foot forward and not make any mistakes and be likable, but not, you know, overly helpful to the point where you're annoying. Any advice that you received that you felt was, you know, really great, or advice that you would give to someone going into your shoes for away rotations now that you've done a few of them yourself?
I'd say show up, be positive, be kind to everyone, because the MAs, the staff, they're going to talk. Turn over rooms. You know, don't be asked to clean up a room. Like, go in there, figure out how the MAs are cleaning up the room, how the MAs are setting up the room for the next patient. And if you're not with the patient, do it and make that MA's job a little bit easier. That's going to help. Another thing is they always say that, you know, you don't need to know anything. Just show up and be yourself. But so many applicants are stellar, right? So if you're just showing up and being yourself, how are you going to separate yourself? So this is where I'll throw a little shameless plug for the Gren Zone podcast, which is another podcast that I help out with, is utilize that podcast or whatever information, whatever resource, study resource you like for dermatology to have a good understanding of basic dermatology so that you know what something is and can say, hey, you know, this is what I would prescribe so that you stand out a little bit. You know, they always say you don't need to know anything, but why not have a little bit of a leg up with some knowledge to help you stand out? And that's going to help a lot.
Yeah, that podcast, I definitely listened to a few of those. And then I think a lot of people like, I think Looking Bills is a pretty easy read, a quick read, but it'll give you a good overview kind of the basic mm-hmm. derm conditions you can expect to see. So definitely go in a little bit prepared. It sounds like mm-hmm. don't just show up and be yourself and hope that's mm-hmm. enough.
Because it's important to be yourself and it's important to be sociable and find a way to fit into the clinic, but also having some knowledge. And I recommend having some type of derm book with you. You know, you can have it on an iPad or a computer, but you know, if your perception is reality, right? So if you're looking on your iPad and someone's just walking by, it might seem like you're messing around on your iPad or your computer. Have a physical copy of some type of a dermatology book. And it could be like a Fitzpatrick book and it could be a Habib, whatever it is for you. A good one to carry around is like anything that's a derm review, board review, because it's usually quick to the point, especially for students. Like you're not siphoning through all these big books, but if it's a derm review, it's usually like listed in bullet points and you can kind of get quick facts and it's easier to carry. It's more of a paperback. So that's what I would recommend.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's great. So you mentioned the networking and kind of finding residents who or graduates from your school who are residents or now kind of past that stage. And then kind of networking while you're there is also something that's crucial and important. Like you mentioned, everyone talks, the MAs, the program coordinators, whatever it is. I was at a conference. It was like an educators conference, a derm educators conference in the fall. And someone presented a research project about like the impact of program coordinators on the rank mm-hmm. list. And I was shocked by that. I was like, I didn't mm-hmm. know that some of them actually will sit in those rank meetings and like have mm-hmm. input in that. Not saying they should or they shouldn't, but I just didn't know that was even a yep. thing. And so kind of being aware of that, you know, and I think this goes without saying, this is something that we should be doing regardless if we're on an away or not, but being kind to everyone around us. Yep. Because, you know, just because someone is an MA versus the program coordinator who's been there for 5 years versus the program director who's been there for 30, they shouldn't be treated any differently. And I think that goes a long way when it comes time to talking about your name around this table mm-hmm. and how they want to see you in the future.
I will say if you fake that kindness, it's going to be recognized. These program directors, these attendings who have been in like an academic setting have been doing this for a long time. They know how to read people. They know how to read students. They know how to see if you're being genuine. So don't go in there and BS people. Be kind to everyone. And like you said, you should just be doing this anyways.
Yeah. So while you're there, I mean, you're only there for a short week, maybe two. How important is connecting with the residents? And some programs might have, you know, one resident per class. Some might have more than that. And so it's probably hard to connect with programs that have more residents in the class. But how do you go about doing that? And how important is that when it comes to doing those aways and kind of the connections you have leaving that rotation?
I think that's very important. And I think it's hard, especially if it's a week long. You can make connections. You can stand out. You can find ways to connect with somebody. But I think what I did is I made connections before I got there. You know, I reached out to the program coordinators and asked if there was any residents that needed help with any projects. You know, I'm a big advocate for using social media as a networking thing, not just consuming, but I basically found residents from each program that I was interested in, followed them, you know, and I would send them a direct message, be like, hey, you know, I'm a student, if there's anything you can help with. And what's kind of beneficial for me was being the podcast host and the chair of this podcast. I use it as a tool, but it was a way to get them on the podcast so then I could talk to them and I made a connection that way before I got to the program. Every program that I went to, I interviewed someone from that program. So when I got there, they already knew me. So without the podcast, you can just be a student who's interested in getting information from a resident. And I'm telling you, dermatology, most of the dermatology individuals, dermatologists or dermatology residents, want to help. They know how hard it is to get into dermatology. So if you just reach out and take the chance and not being afraid to reach out, they will get back to you and find a way to communicate with you and get you information. So I think trying to find information, go on their website and see which residents are listed on their website. Find them on Instagram. Follow them on Instagram. Send them a direct message. Say, hey, I'm a third year or I'm a second year and I'm interested in derm and your program stands out because of XYZ. What can I do to get maybe on the phone call with you or a text message or a Zoom call to get more information? So that way you're building connection before you go to that program.
Yeah, I think that's great. And even like you mentioned, the podcast is a great kind of platform that you were able to use for that. And I think we have a lot of episodes on already published with residents from a lot of programs around the country. And I think if you find a program that you resonate with, see if we have an episode from a resident that's there. Mm-hmm. And more often than not, we include the resident's email address or some type of contact information in the show notes. And feel free and, you know, hey, I listened to your DIGA podcast episode and really enjoyed when you mentioned this. I'm interested in your program and kind of derm in general. What advice would you have? And so even if you're not hosting a podcast, still using the episodes to your mm-hmm. benefit, I think can be important as well. And all of these residents have been in your shoes. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows how hard it is to get into derm and they were in your shoes a couple of years ago, some of them maybe even only a year or two ago. And so I'm sure they all had someone who helped to mentor and guide them and just give them advice along the way. And so I would imagine that the majority of them, and in my experience, it's been the case, are more than happy to return the favor that they received from someone when they were also asking questions and unsure of the future, because it was always so, mm-hmm. so nerve-wracking in the moment.
Yeah, I think another way you can go about this is if you're a part of your dermatology interest group at your school, or if it's not a DIGA and if it's just a derm club, see if they will be willing to do a Zoom talk with your club. You know, see if they'll do talk on some type of topic, or basically how we modify an episode to, like, what did you do to get into residency? Have them speak to your class, your club about that, you know, yeah. And that's a way to make a connection with them.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great advice. So, going back a little bit into your timeline. So we talked about kind of you finding the interest in derm, your networking. What else were you doing in that time to make yourself a competitive applicant? I know we always mention kind of, you know, the research, the things like that, mm-hmm. but was there anything in particular that you felt like maybe was brought up during your interviews, like a particular interest, activity, involvement, things like that, that you felt, you know, going into the application, you're like, oh, I don't know how impactful this will be, but it seemed to kind of constantly be brought back up during your interviews.
So I think one of my strengths in my application, besides like me as a person, were my publications. I had a fairly decent number of publications on my ERAS application. And as a DO, again, that's very hard. We don't have like an academic institution to get published at. But luckily, I was next to my campus is not far from CU, their med school. And there's a dermatologist who runs a lab through CU where I was able to get in with, and I got published. So I think you don't need a million publications, but I think you need to show that you know how to learn outside of just looking at PowerPoints. Because basically publishing, you're doing lit reviews, you're reading other articles, and you're learning how to analyze that and then put it into your own words on a publication. So I think getting published 3, 4, 2, whatever it is, just have a few on your application is going to be important so that they see that you're willing to do that and you know how to do that. I think me personally, though, another thing that stood out was I broke my neck and my back and I was paralyzed 6 years ago now. Luckily, I'm walking today, but I created a charity. And this is when I say have something on your application that is you, that you can talk about. So I created a charity called One Way Out, where we've raised about $8,000 to date. And we've donated 100% of our proceeds to Craig Hospital in Denver, which is like the number one TBI and SCI hospital. So I was able to talk on that. Like, why did I do it? Why was it so important to me? You know, everyone was like, why aren't you going to neurology? Why aren't you going to ortho spine? You know, well, dermatology is where my heart is, but this is how I'm keeping my connection to those spinal cord injury patients, to those patients who are paralyzed. So I was able to do something that was me. It's not dermatology. It wasn't research. It wasn't medicine. I guess it's medicine, but it wasn't anything that's like directly to school. This is me that I wanted to talk about. And I was able to incorporate that into my application to talk about that a lot.
Yeah, I think that's cool and very unique. Like you mentioned, everyone that applies to derm and really anyone that's in class next to your classmates, anyone in medical school is an exemplar individual. And mm-hmm. as deserving as you are to be in the position that you might be in one day. And so kind of just how do you make yourself, how do you be yourself and be unique?
Right.
Don't force yourself to start a charity for people who have TBIs and spine injuries. If that's not something you're passionate about, just to be unique.
Right.
Cause I don't think you need to do something that involved to really show like your uniqueness and your own expressiveness. Yeah. But finding a way to just kind of show you on your application, and it's not someone that you could copy and paste my name for Nate's name in the application and they wouldn't know any different. It would read the same. So find a way to make it you, make it your own. And it doesn't have to be massive or large or starting a charity. It could be something small, but I think really putting your stamp on your application is kind of repeated advice that I've been given over and over.
Right. They want to know who you are and why are you different? What do you bring? What personality traits are you bringing to this program? So if it's you're a baker and maybe you start recording yourself baking on YouTube and you put that on YouTube and you have all this stuff like you're baking cakes and pies and muffins, if that's on your application, that's you, right? That's you as an individual. People are going to be like, wow, that stands out. This person is doing well. They have publications, they have good scores, and they have time to bake and put it on YouTube. Like, wow, that's going to be something that stands out to talk. Like it's, everyone wants to hit the check the boxes, but like you just said, if there's something that you could personally put you on your application, that's very important.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And it helps to keep yourself sane, human, if you will, grounded, allowing yourself to have those hobbies, connections, whatever it might be that you had prior to entering med school. But I think oftentimes we tend to prioritize, I need to do this, and this to like get to where I want to be one day. And then I can like take a step back and like finally start baking again, finally start whatever it might be again. And there's always going to be the next thing. And I'm definitely not perfect at this myself, but I think like allowing yourself to maintain your interests, whether it's even just one, as you're going through each stage of your career, because you're always going to be once I'm a resident, once I've made it to derm, once I'm an attending, once I've paid off all my loans, once I've paid off my practice, once I'm retired, and by that time you're going to, you know, not have any time left. And so being sure that you keep yourself and your interests as a part of whatever else you're doing in your life, I think is just advice that I would give to anyone regardless of what you go into.
I love that you add that, because we're so about that delayed gratification, right? We know going into medicine, we know that there's a delayed gratification. We know that there's somewhere down the line, this is going to pay off. But if you, like you just said, if you don't live now, if you don't live in this moment, while still working hard and making time for the fun, you're never going to reach that delayed gratification. You're going to keep pushing it. So I'm glad that you put that in there.
Not to say once you get your first resident paycheck to go and buy a new car and do all that stuff, but at the same time, enjoy life. Like there's always going to be something else to look forward to. So why not enjoy the now and have the gratification, if you will, kind of periodically and you know, ever flowing throughout the years, instead of at one point in time where you're trying to reach that peak.
I'll add two more things that were on my application that stood out was this podcast. And again, it's not just because I was doing a podcast, but it was something that I did. You know, I have my own personal podcast. I have my hands in a few other podcasts, but again, that was personally me. So I was able to talk about that personally. And then the other one is military service. So if you're a veteran, if you're in the military, a lot of programs like to see that, because they know that you know how to work hard. They know that you know leadership. They know that you know camaraderie. And if it's not military and you have leadership skills elsewhere, be able to convey that, because that's very important.
Yeah. So one thing I guess I've never really thought about until the last match happening a couple of days ago and things like that. And this whole idea of rank lists. And it's obviously going to be very unique and very personal to each individual, but going to the residency programs, I know oftentimes I say it myself, like I'll go anywhere that takes me, given the opportunity or the privilege of having kind of choices, if you will, having more than one school that maybe is expressing interest in you. What are some of the things that you personally looked for when you were looking at a program and deciding kind of how to rank your list at the end of the day?
Great question. Man, so many programs are good. And wherever you go, you're probably going to get great training, whether you apply yourself or you're just going to a good program. So I think for me, one of the big ones was location, honestly. Will my family like this? It's not just me. You know, I was in the military. I could treat any place like a duty station for 4 years. I can go to Alaska or wherever for 4 years, do whatever I got to do. But I have a wife and kids. So one of the big ones is like, is this location good? That's external. Like externally, is this location important? That was high on my like choosing. And then the program wise was, how are the attendings? Are they helping you? Are they willing to teach you? Or are they just kind of like using you as free labor? Two was, how are the residents? If you're in a didactics room with them and they are laughing and giggling, but also having fun and making you feel at home, that was a big one for me. And then three, I'm interested in Mohs, and I can officially say now that I want to do Mohs because I'm not worried about matching. I'm going to do Mohs. That's the plan right now. I'm going to do Mohs if they've matched Mohs surgeons before, if they have a home program. So it was kind of those big things. Like, are the attendings very open to us being a part of the program, not just using us? And then were they open to individuals that have families? Because I'm a father and a husband first, and I'll say that 100%. I'm a father and a husband first. So are they open to that? Are they going to give me a hard time? So that was big. Two, the residents. Were the residents close-knit? Did it feel like they get along well? And then three was, how well were they at matching into like subspecialties? So that's kind of what made me kind of make my rank list, choosing basically with what I did.
Mm-hmm. And like I said, I think everyone's going to be a bit unique, but I think at the same time, everyone's going to want to have residents that they get along with. They enjoy mm-hmm. going to work every day because it is a job. They're going to have, you know, support when it comes to like personal interests, hobbies. You take time off because you're sick. You need a day to recover from who knows what. They're not going to give you grief about it.
Mm-hmm. I think another thing that I just got done with applications. So like, why our program, right? So when you're looking for a program, you want to see dermatologists, like who's running the show. Are they good doctors? Do they care for their patients? But also look, if you have the opportunity, or if you spent time with maybe graduates from a program, on how those doctors care for their patients. Because that's, you know, sure, each doctor has their own personality, but they're going to get a certain type of training from each program. So I would always say, you know, they embody the type of dermatologist I want to be. And I know I'll have my own spin on it, but these dermatologists that came from this program is how I want to be a dermatologist or treat my patients in the future. So I know that I'm going to get this from here or get that from here. And that was important to me too.
Yeah. I think that's a really good perspective to have. Kind of speaking to that. And then the point you mentioned about wanting, you know, Mohs or a specialty, a fellowship after residency. Did you find any, you know, good resources that would maybe show kind of the fellowship match data? So students who are interested in a fellowship kind of have an idea of like historically how that program has mm-hmm. done.
So not a lot of the DO programs have fellowships attached. I think right now there's two that actually have it, but every program I went to said they're in the works. I think especially because the new Mohs rules going through where you have to have a fellowship to practice Mohs. So I think all of them are in the works kind of. So I just basically word of mouth. I talked to everyone that was there. You know, I basically said, hey, you know, I know it's still early, but I love to work with my hands. And Mohs is of interest of mine. So I was just curious on how many people have matched or when was the last person they matched? And they would just run down the list and like, blah, 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 give me all their information. I was like, okay, I took that into my consideration as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you mentioned, you can now say, I want to be a Mohs surgeon, but kind of mm-hmm. in the moment there, or just like when we all apply to med school, it's, I think the advice we're all given is don't go in saying, I want to be a neurosurgeon. If that's something right. you're interested in, it's, you know, I have an interest in neurology. I want to keep my options open mm-hmm. Because yeah. they want to make sure that you're there to learn everything and not just have this one track mind of, oh, that's not relevant to me as a Mohs surgeon one day. So I'm just going to right. put it to the side and not, mm-hmm. not take the time to learn it. When in reality, you're a dermatologist, well, you're a doctor first, you're a dermatologist mm-hmm. second and third, you're a Mohs surgeon.
Yep.
And so you need everything kind of that pyramid beneath you to support you and no shortcuts along the way to become that Mohs surgeon.
Right. So I have no problem with letting people know that you're interested in it, but you can't 100% say like, I'm going to be a Mohs surgeon. So it's like, you know, there's a way to go about it. Like, cause I said I was interested in it from day one, but now I'm going to say that I'm going to be a Mohs surgeon. Like if it takes me longer, if it, whatever happens, I'm going to be a Mohs surgeon. So it's just, there's a certain way to go about it. I kind of want to backtrack about networking with people who've graduated from a program. I kind of mentioned that. So as a DO, and you could probably do this as well as an MD student, but as a DO, I went on the AOCD's website. And they have a list of find a DO dermatologist. And I went on and I looked up a bunch of dermatologists from areas that I was in and see where they graduated from. What program did they graduate from? Try to do an elective with them, maybe a 2-week elective, a week elective, whatever it is, and stand out and try to get a letter so that, again, I'm getting a lecture from Dr. So-and-so who graduated from program X four years ago.
Yeah. And so they know who that is, and they know kind of what person they were like in residency, kind of what doctor they became as they left. And that can impact, I guess, even more so how they view that letter, because they know the person who's writing it. Yeah, that's great.
I was at a program, and I rotated with this doctor. She wrote me a letter. And before I got there, she texted the program director. And then when I interviewed that day, the program director was like, hey, Dr. So-and-so just called me about you. So you're making these connections from people who have been to that program, who have known from that program director, who have known from that program, that is just going to help you better. And I'll be the first one to say it. My scores, I probably should not apply dermatology. To be truthful, but again, I have a strong application with publications, with community service, with leadership, with me as a person, with going and getting face time. And I'm not going to say that can happen every time, but there is truth in making connections and building networks with people.
Yeah, I think that's very prudent. And I was speaking with a friend, and maybe you can kind of echo this sentiment. Recently matched, and we were talking about similar things, and she had mentioned that at 80% of the programs she was offered an interview, she either knew a resident, knew an attending, knew someone who graduated from there, and she can say, you know, not for certainty, but she said, I would, you know, venture to say that a majority of those programs either looked at my application again because someone said, hey, look at this person's application, or they recognized my name when it came across the desk. And so I think that just kind of speaks to your point of who you know is really important in this small field of derm. In your instance, with the interviews you had, did you feel like a good majority of them, you had a connection to the program prior to the interview being extended?
Yep. So again, every program that I interviewed at, I interviewed them on the podcast, or I met someone at a conference somewhere, and then I rotated every single program that I got an interview at. And to be truthful, to be honest, I'm a very honest person. I don't care. My application was probably screened a lot by a lot of programs because I didn't get interviews at any place I didn't rotate at. So I did 7 rotations. I got 7 interviews because I went to those programs and they knew me, not just for my application. So again, it's important to get face time. Sure, your scores may be important in that may be screened by programs that don't know you. But any program that I went to and I brought up my scores before my interview were like, you know, it could be an issue. It could be, you know, a problem, a hurdle for you. But based on who you are and the way you've presented yourself today, there shouldn't be an issue. So, you know, there's the risk, right? I could have not matched. My scores could have hurt me. But you have to take the risk and go show face. But I think if you're lacking in one area of your application, other areas need to be strong. It can't just be like, oh, I know everybody and I have no publications. I have no volunteerism. I have no leadership and I have bad scores. There needs to be something making up for some weakness on your application.
Yeah. And I think, like you mentioned, maybe addressing it head on, if you will. So there's not this, you know, you're worried about this. Maybe they're worried like, you know, I really like Nate, but his scores I'm not sure of. And you're like, I like this program, but like, do I even have a chance because of my scores? And so just like straight up from the gate, like addressing that. How do you feel like that was received when you had those conversations?
Right. So I knew my scores weren't great. And I sat down with every single program director because we had a day with each one. And I, you know, I was like, hey, you know, this is a good time to talk, or do we have a time to maybe chat or have a meeting at the end of the day? Absolutely. And I went about it and they basically were like, you know, dermatology is competitive and it's a challenge if you don't have good scores, because what separates you from someone who has a really good score and you don't have the best score. But they were very straightforward. They're like, again, I showed up on my auditions. I was helpful. Like patients even like vouched for me to the program directors after I left the room and stuff. So I think it's on how you present yourself. If you show up and have this conversation and you have like a horrible attitude and you're not incorporating yourself in the clinic and you're not helping out, it's probably going to be received differently. And again, I don't know, like I think I knew people before I got to the programs, and I think that might help too. But I basically showed my worth before I was just like, hey, my scores aren't great, do you think I have a shot? I showed my worth in the short amount of time I could, in any possible way I could, to show that I'm going to do this as a resident too. And they were all welcome. I had one program director tell me, she was like, with who you are, with the way you care for patients, with your personality and like your everything about you, you should have a pick of where you want to go. I don't care about your scores. So that's what, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but most of the program directors told me that.
Yeah. Yeah. And unfortunately it is like a standardized way essentially to screen. It's hard to, you know, have one-on-one time with 1,000 applicants for two positions. So it does have its purpose, but at the end of the day, I don't care what my family practice doc got on step two. If he's a good doctor and I enjoy going to him and I feel like he's taking care of me, that's all that matters. And I think that, you know, kind of that sentiment being echoed to you in your interviews and your rotations, things like that, I think goes a long way. Obviously it is competitive and there's needs to be some type of way to kind of separate people because everyone's a great applicant. But knowing that it's reassuring to hear, I guess, essentially that they care about, you know, how you interact with patients, how you carry yourself, how you interact with others around you. And that in some sense, you know, that can make up for, or even totally erase maybe a spot of your application that's lacking.
And I want to say this. So when I decided on derm, I knew standardized tests were kind of difficult for me. It's just the truth. So I knew that I was going to have to be strong somewhere else. And this was day one, year one, when I decided on derm. And I knew what my strength was. It was building connections, building rapport, and communicating with people. So from, like I said, from day one, when I decided on derm, I knew that I had to network. And that's what I did from year one to year four, was network my butt off to make sure that I made connections. And if that's what you have to do, do it. And if it's get 100 publications, get 100 publications. Whatever it is you think your strength's going to be, do it so you can talk about it and you can show that on your application. But I want to say again, just because you have bad scores and you have a good personality does not mean you're going to match. You have to have a balanced application. I could be an anomaly. I don't know. But you have to put in the work somewhere else if you're going to be lacking somewhere else in your application.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think in general, just definitely being well-rounded and kind of having aspects, if you will, if a program highly values research, you know, you've had your experience in research. If they don't care as much about research, they care about your community involvement. You kind of have that community involvement that you can speak to, and being able to, I guess, tailor your conversation to whatever the program's interest is, and not having to fumble through something because you're kind of are well balanced, well rounded, and have experienced things in your life. I think goes a long way when it comes time to have those conversations.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, any other advice you have for our listeners? I know we've enjoyed having you on the podcast. We're going to miss your voice being around. But any kind of final parting remarks, sentiments? You've left a lot with us today. I think that will be very helpful as we all go through the application process here in a little while.
I just want to say that if you think you're going to go into dermatology and you believe that in your heart, don't let anyone tell you no. That's with anything in life. Like, if you think you're going to do it, do it. And I'm the person that's all in. Go 100% on this if that's what it's going to be. If that's what it's got to take. Give it your best. Give it your all. And you may fall short. But again, try again the next year and don't be down, because it is hard to get into. And, you know, maybe I'm saying that now because I matched or whatever, but you just have to try your best, make the connections, work hard. And I believe that everything good comes from hard work. So,
yeah. Well, you're a testament of that. And I think we're all leave inspired from you and your story, and hopefully you can continue to inspire those around you. And it's kind of a pyramid effect, a domino effect, if you will, and we could all be bettered for the experiences that we share together.
I appreciate that. I'm excited to see what you and the team do with the rest of the podcast. Your turn's next. You have, I remember being this time last year. Okay, well, I'm the last class, so it's my turn. And I was never anxious before until this time last year. And I had a little bit of like anxious feeling, like, oh my God, oh my gosh, good gosh, like whatever. It's coming. So just trust the process, keep making connections, publish, work hard, whatever it is you have to do, do it.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And thank you so much for being here with us and for sharing your story with us. I know we all appreciate it and wish you best of luck as you go forward with your residency and hopeful Mohs surgery fellowship later on down the road.
Appreciate that.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the DIGA podcast. We hope you enjoyed. Please send us any questions or comments to derminterestpod@gmail.com.
This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.